Okay, let's begin. In Perek Lamed, in Devarim, it reads, "Vayoki yavo alecha kol dvarim ha'ele, habracha v'haklala, asher natati lefanecha, v'ashivota el levavecha, v'chol agoyim asher hidachecha asher malkecha shama." So I'm going to stop for a moment after that first pasuk and try to get context that we could understand where we're at. Over here it speaks specifically about all the blessings and the curses, so you can get fooled into thinking it's just referring to something which is very local right over here. But the reality is that you have to look at least the last third or so of Sefer Devarim as one larger unit. And in that larger unit we had the most horrific tochacha imaginable, back in Kitavo, which speaks again of the most frightening things taking place. And it's interesting because, a lot of times in Chumash it says, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. If you do this, this is what's going to happen. And it leaves it open. When it comes over here to the Tochacha, it sounds like this is what's going to happen to you. It sounds much more predictive. Matter of fact, there's a beautiful passage in the, I believe it's in the Tikkuni Zohar, no, it's in the Zohar Chadash, at the in Parshat Kitavo, which talks generally about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, that he was far away from the students, he had left, he'd hidden, and so on. And it says that one day in the Beit Midrash, a question arises, and the question is, that if you look at the Tochacha in Vayikra, at the very end of Vayikra, you have a Tochacha, and there it says that it's going to come a day that the Jews are going to come back. They're going to come back to the land. They're going to remember. They're going to remember. God will remember. The land will remember, and so on and so forth. And at the end of Devarim, there doesn't seem to be the same kind of guarantee which is stated. And at least the way that it's written there in the Zohar is that one day they make the drash, they notice this, and instead of saying, here's a Musar from the Zohar, instead of saying, well, this is a big problem, and, forget it, we're going to give up hope, it says that woe unto us, because Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is not here. If Shimon Bar Yochai were here, he definitely would have an answer for this question. So it says, the Chacham, I believe it was Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai, it says that he decides he's going to send a message. So he writes down a message, and it says that a bird stops, right there. He gives it to the bird. The bird goes flying off, finds Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, gives him the message. He reads it, and then he says he starts to cry. And why he starts to cry? He says, what's going to happen in the future when future generations notice this? They won't have an answer to that. Again, in typical Zohar fashion, at that moment, Eliyahu Hanavi shows up, and Eliyahu comes and says, I was going someplace else, but I saw you were crying. I came to dry your tears. And there's one, as I said, a wonderful, beautiful Zohar over there. But the truth is that question or that observation, whether there are guarantees at the end or not, it really depends on how you understand certain psukim over here. That's what we're about to read. Is that a commandment or is that a description? So that's exactly what my point is that there are different ways of reading these verses. I do want to make another observation. Over here it says all these things are going to happen to you. The blessings, the curses, and so on. V'hashevota el levavecha b'chol agayim. Now that's a little unclear. What does this mean? V'hashevota. You notice the root of the word. It says shav, which is similar to return. Does it mean tshuva? Does it mean Zionism? V'hashevota el levavecha. Something's going to return to your hearts. B'chol hagayim, in the midst of all of the non-Jews. Asher hidacha shama kecha shama, where God has thrust you away. And then the next pasuk says, v'shavta ad Hashem alokecha, and then you're going to return to God. V'shamata b'kolo, and you listen to his voice. K'chol asher anochi mitzavcha ayom, in accordance with Moshe says, with all that I'm commanding you today. Ata uvanecha, which by the way is a little interesting. Who's the ata? Which means if this is the future, this is not you. It should be vanecha uvnei vanecha. What is this ata uvanecha? V'chol levavecha v'chol nafshecha. V'shav Hashem elokecha et shvutcha v'rechamecha. God will return to your returning, which those of you who don't realize yet that this is awkward. We already had a first returning, and then we have another returning, and now we have another returning, and God's returning. V'shav Hashem et shvotcha v'yirechamecha, v'shav kibetzcha mikol ha'amim. God's going to gather you from all the nations. Asher v'yitzcha Hashem alakecha shamar, where he sent you. Okay, there's a little more here, but I want to pause right now. The Ramban writes, Faris Karti, I already wrote back in Vayikra, this is something the Ramban says and is also found in the same passage in the Zohar. The Ramban claims that the Tochacha in Vayikra refers to the Churban of Bayit Rishon. And he claims that the Tochacha in Dvarim refers to Churban Bayit Sheni. Now, it's very nice the Ramban said that, but, you know, reading the Psukim, you know, where did he get it from? Yeah.
Also, if that's the end of the Zohar, that's pretty dismal.
Well, it depends how it ends up. I didn't tell you the whole thing. I stopped. There's more. There's more to the story. One second. Do you all get the point of the Ramban? This is Bayit Rishon, this is Bayit Sheni? Yes? Very nice. So let me explain this a little bit, and then we're going to come back to this point. And then I'll tell you what he could have said, which could have been what some of you will think is a better argument than he gives. But we'll understand. Should we start with that? So confusing. Okay, have you ever heard of Bible criticism? Yeah, you heard something about it. So in Bible criticism, at least in the original Wellhausian understanding, which even though people have pretty much come to the conclusion that all kinds of individual things that he said may not be accurate, there doesn't seem to be a very strong movement just to completely give it up. What he said is that there are different authors, which I don't want to get into right now, different documents, but he did say there's J, E, P, D, and R, right? So D is Deuteronomy, is the Deuteronomist. So part of the claim is that Sefer Devarim was one of the last books that were written. Why? Forget about everything else. Now, why did they have to claim... Yeah, Devarim is one of the last things that was written, was the claim. Why? And the Ramban could have said, but he's ignoring all this. Why? Because it says you're going to come back. So this is prophetic. So the Jews came back and they built the second Beit HaMikdash. So the claim there was that it wasn't written until after they came back. So therefore, any time that you have prophecy, right, what your secular Bible critic will then try to claim is that instead of prophecy, what do you have? You have yesterday's newspaper. What's the value of yesterday's newspaper? They sell it with dead fish, right? Now, yesterday's newspaper is of no value whatsoever. So therefore, it was incredibly important for those looking to try to, you know, understand the text and say that there's nothing divine over here, to push it as late as possible. So how late do you have to push it? You have to push it till after the Jews already came back. So now, if the Ramban wanted to counter Bible critics, he could have said, no, this, right? He could have... Okay. What is he saying, though? He's saying, forget about it. He's not concerned with this. He says that the Sefer Devarim, when it talks about a Chorban and a rebuilding, it's not Chorban Bayit Rishon and the rebuilding of the temple Bayit Sheni. The Ramban says that you're talking about Chorban Bayit Sheni and then the eventual coming back at the end, which means this is what we would call the exile of Rome. Did you all understand what I just said in the last 2 minutes?
He's not feeding. What he says, feeding the Bible.
He's ignoring them. It's even better. Loch patlo.
He's ignoring.
Right. This doesn't bother, which means as far as he's concerned. But again, we have to understand something. Why is the Ramban saying this? The Ramban says, again, that the Tochacha, the rebuke at the end of Vayikra, that's by Yisrisha. The Tochacha rebuke at the end of Dvarim, that's by Chin. Now the Ramban is going to try to show a little bit how the themes within each will match within each time. You can argue with him on that. What's really bothering the Ramban? So let me give you a little bit more information. Why do we need two Tochachas? So you can say it's always good to have more Musar. Why not? I mean, it works. So the Tochacha has a very particular agenda to it. What was supposed to happen at the end of Sefer Vayikra? What a bad question. Right? And by the way, if you hate questions like this, I will just let you know, Rabbi Soloveitchik used to ask this all the time. What should come next? And you look at, what do you mean what should come next? I'll look at the next page, that's what comes next. So he would always like, what should come next? Where should this mitzvah have been written? What would a better place to write this? He always used to ask us things like this. Over here, this point, think a second. The Jews leave Egypt. What are they supposed to do? Go to Har Sinai, get the Torah, next? Go to Eretz Yisrael. That's all. So what happens before they go to Eretz Yisrael? You have a long rebuke. Listen. One second. Did any of your parents sit you down before you came to Eretz Yisrael? Warn you not to get into trouble? None of you? Yeah, good, good. What kind of parents do you have? No? Moshe sits them down and says, before we go in, this is what is going to happen. This is what could happen. This is what you should avoid happening. Moshe sits down and says, listen, the rules are going to be different over here and in order to make this work. So now, that's why the Tochacha is written in context in Vayikra. Now, all of you guys know a secret. What's the secret? They didn't go into Israel then. But don't you all appreciate how Sefer Bamidbar wasn't really necessary? Yes? And if you don't need Sefer Bamidbar, because let's say they go straight, what happens at the end of Vayikra, or the beginning of Bamidbar? The cloud lifts up and they start to go. Where should they go? Straight to Eretz Yisrael. You don't need Sefer Bamidbar, you don't need Sefer Dvarim, correct? Why do we have Sefer Dvarim? So Moshe can repeat everything he said, but why repeat it? Moshe's repeating things that he said, and by the way, he doesn't repeat what you think he repeats. Moshe repeats what he says to who? To the new generation. This is the children. This is not the same generation. So now, in a sense, the trip to Israel at the end of Vayikra was aborted. So if that's the case, why was the Tochacha kept? Are you with me on that question still? Okay, why is it there? They're supposed to go to Eretz Yisrael. What happens? They don't go to Eretz Yisrael.
Why don't we just leave it out of the Torah?
Exactly. Leave it out. You think every single thing that Moshe ever said to them, every single thing that Kadosh Baruch Hu said to them, was included?
Is that like a standard?
No, I'm just saying, you think everything was said? Of course not. If that was said then, because then they were supposed to go in, they didn't go in, so we don't need it anymore. One second. You all understand this question? Even though if you don't think so, this happens to be a very good question. This is the question the Ramban is coming to answer.
Because it's there for the contrast.
Listen again. This is the question the Ramban is coming to answer. What's the Ramban's answer? It's not just about what took place in the desert. That each one of these tochachot have within them embedded messages for the future. One is really a message focusing on what's going to unravel and cause the Chorban of Bayit Rishon. The other one includes a message of what's going to happen, including what's going to unravel and cause Chorban Bayit Sheni. You hear that? That's what the Ramban is claiming over here. So therefore, you say, okay, let's just get rid of it. No, you can't get rid of it. That's a prophecy which is needed for the future. By the way, what is the klal that the Gemara says in Megillah? It says basically there were a million different prophets, many, many prophecies. Which ones were kept? The ones that we needed for the future. So therefore, what the Ramban is really saying fits precisely within the Masorah that we have from that Gemara. That the Tochacha is kept, even though it may not have really been important then, because, as I said, that trip was aborted, but we needed that message because the Jews will need that prophecy for the future. So again, the Ramban doesn't care, you know, the Bible critics, he doesn't care about this. And he right away says, no, the Tochacha in Devarim, which, by the way, all of us could have used if we were to debate, and I would without a hesitation, I would use this in responding to Bible critics because I know what bothers them. What bothers them is that the Torah would seem to be prophetic. They want to take away the prophecy. How do you take away the prophecy? You push it as far as you possibly can. By the way, my basic question I would ask over here, bless you. So according to what they're saying, therefore the Torah was not put together until Ezra came back. Right? The Torah was not put together until Ezra came back and was Ola. Ezra and together with 40,000 people came to Eretz Israel. And how in the world did they convince all the people still in Bavel to accept the Torah? One second. By the way, you know what the answer would be? That's a question of anthropology and psychology, and that's not really our field. We deal with Bible.
Does it make sense in those fields either?
No, what ends up happening is that you have people who have expertise in different areas. But over here, if Ezra made the whole thing up afterwards, then how? Who has this kind of central authority to start going to Jewish communities all over? There were Jewish communities in Egypt at this point. There were Jewish communities in Babylon. There were Jewish communities, again, spread out. 127 different nations. You know the story of Purim, yeah.
Isn't that not ostracized, just like some Islam and some Christianity
are both like centralized in this way? Yeah, but we have records then of proselytizing which takes place. In Islam, the proselytizing, you still know about it. They'll chop off your head if you choose not to join them. But I'm saying, but we have records of proselytizing. There's absolutely no records whatsoever of the proselytizing taking place. But I mean, quite the opposite is the truth, is that we find Jewish communities, very old Jewish communities, who have very old Jewish traditions. So what I'm just saying is that this may sound like a little point. It's actually far more interesting than you would have thought. But if I would have said, absolutely, which means the text must be older. If the text is older, it is prophetic. I'd ignore the Ramban completely and say, you know, give it up. So let's come back. So the Ramban stresses that this whole thing is prophetic. He writes, again, listen to the line of the Ramban. He writes, Ki ha-parsha hazot atida, it will take place in the future. Ki kol inyana lo hayu v'lo nivra'u. Everything described over here has not happened yet. Avohem atidim lihiyot. This will take place in the future, which means Perek Lamed, which is after the Tochacha, and is a response to the Tochacha, and says all these bad things are going to happen, but at the end of all that, there's going to be some type. Now, I have a problem. I don't know what word to use. Should I use the word a massive tshuva movement? Should I use the word an awakening? Will it? What type of awakening will this be? Again, purely religious, political, nationalistic. What are the verses describing, and what is it the commentary see? One more element that I skipped. In Pasuk Vav, it says, "Umol Hashem Elokecha levavcha, v'levav zarecha." God is going to literally circumcise your hearts and those of your children. Le'avat Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha l'man chayecha. So, just about wherever you look in terms of Mefarshim, are going to take this section in different places. So I don't know how much to go into any one of them, but let me say something which the Ramban says, again, in the same section. This is Perek Lamed, Pasuk Aleph. At the end, he writes, and he's responding now to this heart being circumcised. What does that mean to you, by the way, and heart being circumcised? You do agree it's a very strange phraseology. What does that indicate to you? Any kind of reference? Yeah.
That
What is going to be stripped?
Some sort of part of our heart or being or existence is being stripped from us.
Mm-hmm. Do you see this as an evolutionary process? What do you hear? Oh, good. And then I would just add one point to the question. What's the frame of reference that it's dealing with? Which means that the change is going to take place. So what's the frame of reference? Is this going to be something completely new, or are we going to be reverting back to something that was? Right? So listen to the next line of the Ramban then. He writes, V'yashuv adam b'zman nezeh l'asher haya kodim cheto shel adam harishon. Now, the Ramban just said a mouthful, and it's a difficult mouthful, and it goes back to the very core, the most difficult things that is the are for us to understand, and those are the early chapters in Bereshit. By the way, just in case you're wondering, if you heard those words, Shehaya ose b'tivo masheroi lasot, in a Perek Bet Pasuk Tet, the Ramban writes, he uses word for word describing Adam before the chait of eating from the Eitz HaDaat Tov V'Ra. So what the Ramban sees, and this is a general principle in the Ramban understands the future as a completion of something which took place in the ancient past. I would go so far as to say that the reality is we don't need the first three chapters of Bereshit. When I say we don't need them, why don't we need them? Because I've never been anybody who understands them. So therefore I say we don't need them because obviously we don't understand them. Was that unfair? Yes, was that unfair? Or was that was completely fair? And anything you think you understand, well, not really shot. Everything's very deep and everything's very mystical. Okay, very good. But I'm saying, yeah?
Yes, people understand it.
Okay. Who?
Yeah,
it's not what it says. I'm kidding. I'm just saying is that they're very, very difficult. And every saying things to be shrouded and hidden and nothing means what it says. The Ramban, by the way, says that. The Ramban says at the very beginning that the things about Ma'aseh Bereishit cannot be understood from the Pesukim. The only way you can understand what's going on is if you have a Mesorah. So if that's the case, what do I need the Pesukim for? I'll say it again. Again, I don't want to push this point too far, but according to the Ramban, the reason we need these Pesukim is because it sets up a utopia that we're supposed to go back to. Which means that's why they're there. They're not there to tell us what happens. Which means, essentially, the Torah is a very bad history book. All over. Why is it a bad history book? It's not organized. It doesn't tell you everything. It skips things. It's as a history book, it's not a good history book. By the
way,
what? I didn't say it's infactual. I just said it's not a good history book. I'm just saying we make a mistake if we judge it as a history book. That's the mistake. What is it? It's a book of theology with law. But fundamentally, it's a book of theology. So instead of just saying it's a bad history book, saying, wow, it's a great book of theology. So now that sounds a little bit better. I don't get you as upset. So, but that wouldn't have been as good anyway. So it's a bad history book. But the Torah is not a bad history. It's not supposed to be a history book. So therefore, why tell me what happened in the beginning? Again, you know, Rashi is in the beginning. Could have started Chodesh Elochem. Says, no, there's theology to learn over there. Not history to learn. There's theology to learn. So again, according to the Ramban, why do we need these early chapters? Not to tell us what was, but rather to tell us what will be. Which is, that's the point of the Ramban. And that's why the words of the Ramban's commentary, right over here, Perek Lamed, Pasuk Aleph, are identical to the Ramban's commentary of describing Adam prior to eating from the Eitz HaDaat Tov
HaRa.
I didn't say the word Tchiyas Meisim, but I know why you're saying it. But yes, yes. There are those who include that as well. See, when you went to Tchiyas Meisim, you said something interesting. Because you're saying, hold it. When Adam sinned, Adam and Eve sinned, so what happens? So you eat from the Eitz HaDaat Tov HaRa, so what is the result? The result is death. So therefore you're saying, so there must be death. So very good, very good. But there's something else, which means, is that all that there is? Or what happens when you eat from the Eitz HaDaat Tov HaRa? So first of all, note that it sounds pretty good. You know, a tree that has tov ra, or a tree of knowledge sounds very good, but it's not a tree of knowledge, that's the problem. It's a tree of knowledge of tov ra. So what happens when you eat from a tree that has tov ra?
Your physical body is nearly elevated by your soul. So therefore, you never get to a state of actual awareness that you're supposed to get to the fact that our body is no longer able to.
Very good. What happens? Something changes profoundly. By the way, what else happens when you eat something which has Tov HaRa mixed up in it? You can get confused now between Tov HaRa. The Sforno, you can decide if he really says it or not. If he doesn't say it, he almost says it. But to Batipakachna eneshnehem, this Sforno writes, this is Perek Gimel Pasuk Zayin, Natnu lev el kol arav v'ta'anug af al pi sheyazik. What does it mean their eyes were opened up? That now they were able to eat something which was, maybe it's arav there, something which is good looking and desirable, even though it's going to hurt you. Which means, according to the Sforno, what was created when they ate from this tree? The ability to justify. the ability to make justifications. You know it's going to hurt you, but I'm going to do it anyway. Why? Because now it's a conglomeration. There's both tov and there's ra there. So what do you say to yourself when you're about to do it? I'm just going to get the tov out of it. Right? It's like the Gemara says with Rav Meir, when he was learning with Acher anyway, he says, how can you learn from Acher? It says, I eat the food and I spit out the pit. So that's all of us, that's what we do in life. Which means there's very little in this world that is 100% bad for us that we eat anyway, or we ingest, or we partake of, right? Because that would be total, total death wish. So what do we do instead? We look at that little sliver of good which may be there and tell us, okay, it's worthwhile to get this good, even though there may be some collateral damage. But by the way, do you realize what the problem then is? The problem, therefore, is going to be a fundamental problem. Now, you can decide whichever way you want to go. Is it a fundamental thinking problem? Is it a fundamental intellectual problem? Is it a fundamental spiritual problem? What's happened? What Ramban is leading us towards is that is the circumcision on our hearts that we need to go through to undo that which happened when we ate from that tree. Because eating from that tree, it's not just that it caused death. Death, I think, is the result. It's the byproduct. But what happened, it changed us fundamentally, that now we're going to do things which are going to lead to death. Yeah. Your point is correct, that our life, this is very important, our life is full of conflicts, right? Most conflicts in our lives are not conflicts between good and bad, right? Conflicts that we really have are between good and better or bad and worse. Very rarely do you have in front of you two choices, 100% good, 100% bad. And if those are the choices, for most of us, those would not be choices. The problem is when you have degrees of things, and therefore you have situations that create conflicts. Correct, correct. What the Sforno's point was that before partaking from this tree, man did not have the ability to justify their behavior. Which means this ability that we have today to justify bad things that we do, he says that is the result of, again, he doesn't say it in black and white, that's why I say I may be putting too much into his words. His words is that their eyes were opened up, and now it says that they can have this enjoyment, even though it's going to hurt, which means, hold it, if it's going to hurt, why am I doing it? So it seems to be saying that wasn't the situation before. Situation was, here's good, here's bad. By the way, he's not saying that you couldn't choose bad before. Apparently they did. Meaning, that's the big question. The big question is what changed before they ate from it to after they ate from it? Right? That's the big question. Now they have a Yetzirah before. They didn't have a Yetzirah. How did they sin before? So there are those who want to say the Yetzirah beforehand was external, and therefore that's the serpent. And after they eat, it becomes internal, which means basically we have two different things that we need to understand. One is, what is the serpent? And by the way, I hope you all notice, the serpent doesn't become a serpent until afterwards. Afterwards, it has its legs cut off. Beforehand, it stands, it talks. And by the way, I would just then say, if it talks like a man and it walks like a man, so then you can try to figure out what it was. But it only becomes a serpent afterwards. So what exactly is the nature of this serpent, or proto-serpent, if you will? And the other thing is, what is the nature of this fruit that they eat from? And what did each part cause? So there are those who want to say, and this does go along the way of the Rambam, that those who want to say that the eating of the fruit changed the Yetzirah from being something which is completely external to be something which is internal. And it could be that the Sforno is essentially agreeing with that Rambam and saying the same kind of thing. And now I can justify, because now it becomes internalized, and therefore now I'm going to start justifying it. Again, the word justification may be the key difference over here, or the key issue which was added. What then happens when your heart is circumcised? Suddenly you get clarity. And when you get clarity, you no longer fall into these kinds of mistakes. And this kind of absolute clarity, therefore, allows man to become elevated. And therefore, it's a total game changer, because now we have the ability of seeing things clearly and therefore of making right decisions that we when we look at situations. So that seems to be, you know, as I said, where the Ramban is leading us and where the Sforno continues along the way is that essentially this, by the way, now you realize where the Ramban can't say that this is was all fulfilled during Bayit Sheni? The Ramban is too much of a Kabbalist. It's too much spiritual stuff that he sees over here. He's not concerned, you know, as could be people today with arguing with Bible critics and say, oh, look, prophetically this came true. Because he's saying, what came true? There's one key element which is missing. What's the key element? Forget about return. Maybe you return, you came back. What's the key element which is missing, according to the Ramban? Which verse is missing still? Right, Mal Hashem is Levavchem. If your hearts were not fixed, if you're still broken spiritually, then this can't, by definition, be what is being described. And again, I'm going to read the Ramban from the very beginning over here again. Ki parsha hazot atitaki kol inyana. You hear those words? Kol inyana. Some of the things came true. We came back to the land. We woke up. Some people came back. Ki kol inyana lo hayu v'lo nivro. Avalheim atidin liyot. So what's the point that the Ramban is really focusing on? It's the heart being changed. And therefore, what's really the issue? Of reverting back to the way that mankind was prior to the sin in Gan Eden. And if that's the case, what the Ramban is really telling us, as you correctly understood, the Ramban is talking the Messianic era. This is Yemot HaMashiach. Again, within Yemot HaMashiach, then there's all kinds of things to discuss. Which stage? First stage? Second stage? How many stages? How many years? How does everything take place? Where there's also a great deal of confusion, yeah.
So, let's say that Tchilmin happens, when Mashiach happens, it's what happens, but what it does, that we all revert to our state of being of Chosin. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're inherently going to choose good. I'm Rishon, who was...
Because we can mess up again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the guarantee?
We'll have better skills. We'll have one other advantage also, and that's the only advantage of history. No, that's the only advantage of history, is to be able to look back and try not to make the same mistakes.
Is it one moment that we pick, or is it throughout our lives we have to choose daily to be spiritual? Today?
Today?
No, I'm saying what the basic. I'm really sure it seems that if he had eaten from the fruit, then he would have lived in the garden forever. By us, when it happens, is it going to be the same, or is it going to be every day we challenge?
It really depends on which stage. That's a function of which stage it is that we're talking about. Because if it's the final stage, then it's one situation. It's an earlier stage, it's a different situation. Let me take you through a couple different approaches. The Netziv is interesting. Now, the Netziv is more likely than not, you know who he was when he lived, when he died, more or less. Netziv Natali Tzvi Yehud de Berlin, Yehoshiva Volozhin. This famous story about him that he, as a kid, he never learned at all. And if you hear that story, I find it, even though he may have told it, I find it a little strange, because he married the daughter of Ephraim Volozhin when he was 14. The granddaughter, Itzel Volozhin's daughter. He married her when he was 14 or 15. So if they say that he was such a terrible kid, then when did he do all of his learning? So it's... The story is, a little before his bar mitzvah, he heard his parents talking how he was never learning, they're going to send him off to trade school. And he woke up and he ran out, no, I'm going to start learning. So I'm saying within 2 years, he married Itzel Volozhin's daughter, and basically lining himself up to become the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin. So that was pretty impressive. Anyway, Rav Natali Tzvi Yehud de Berlin, he died in 1893. So you can decide where all that stands in terms of Zionism. See, the thing which is interesting about him is that there are different parts of the family. And he had sons, he had daughters. One of his sons' name was Chaim, who's known as Chaim Berlin, and the yeshiva was named after him. He becomes the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. He has another son named Meir Berlin, who then Hebraicizes his name, becomes Meir Bar Ilan. So I don't know how many people think that Chaim Berlin and Bar Ilan University are siblings, but Rav Meir Bar Ilan was a major, major Zionist leader. He actually was sufficiently Zionist that when Rabbi Soloveitchik ran for chief rabbi of Tel Aviv in 1935, Meir Bar Ilan worked against his being elected because he wasn't Zionist enough. Okay, just to get some perspective. His daughter also married Saul Lieberman, if that's of any interest to you, if you know who this is. Anyway, so of course the Chaim Berlin side and the Shapiro side, he has a daughter who marries Rafael Shapiro, is also one of the Rosh Yeshivas. And Rafael Shapiro's daughter, in turn, marries Rav Chaim Brisk. So, one side of the family becomes decidedly anti-Zionist, another one becomes very pro-Zionist. And so who was he is something which one can debate. But I do want to read some of the things over here. It's in the Hamek Dover, and he starts off almost the exact same way as the Ramban. Parsha zu hi parshat ha-geula. This is the parsha of the geula. Again, this is redemption. This is the future. Nivu'ah brura eich yeh seder ha-geula ha-atida bipertut kasher yuvo'ar. So he's claiming that not only is this going to be about the future redemption, it's going to be detailed, step by step, all of it's over here within the text. As the Rosh Yeshiva Lajon, by the way, I don't know if you know this, one of the things that they did there is they learned every Seder of Shas, they learned Kachim, and that's where the Briskers eventually got it from. He writes over here, again, I'm skipping, there's a lot of things, among Kechol Asher, Anochi Mitzavcha Hayom, according to everything I command you today, Afagav Shetiyu Od Begola, V'yesh Kama Parshiot Shatara She'enu Nohog Klal, Kamo Korbanot V'tarot, V'od Harbe, Mikol Malkom Tishma B'kolo L'dak Deikvahem. He says the prophecy is that you're going to listen to my words, even though you're still in Galut, and a lot of these things don't count. Listening means learning, which means his curriculum in the yeshiva to learn Kodshim and Taros, you see right here him getting out of this, but not only does he getting out, it's as a preparation for the Geula. Again, the Chafetz Chaim opened up a kolel to learn Kodshim. Yes, you know this? He gathered 10 Kohanim, and he wanted them to learn Kodshim, in order that when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, that they'll know what to do. One of the Kohanim he tried to convince to become Rosh Kollel was Rav Kook. Not only that, and this will be roundly denied by all involved, but Rav Kook for a while learned B'chavrusa of the Chanan Wasserman, who was Talmud Muvok, and again, the most anti-Zionist you can imagine. They learned together Kodshim for a bit. Anyway, what the Netziv is saying is that the learning of Kodshim and Taros, that is part of this prophetic parsha over here at the end of Sefer Devarim. That's what we need to do. So again, you can ask to what extent is he setting the curriculum in Velazhin because he thinks certain things are important to learn, and to what extent is this part of what we would call, I'm afraid to say the term now, you would almost call this religious Zionism, which means we need to learn this because of what can come out of it. But if that's not enough, he writes, Vishav Hashem Elokecha V'richamecha, God will have compassion on you. She'yitain bilev umot ha'olam she'yavucha. He's going to cause the hearts within the nations of the world to have affection for the Jews. V'chein mashmu'ut shorish rachem, and so on. I'm skipping again. You'll be gathered, v'kibatzcha mikol ha'goyim, acha she'yishuv yikar ha'golam, and ha'goyim, he says, of a couple of steps. First, the original Zionists will come. Again, that's what he says. And then, the nations will like you. Yoshuv Hashem l'kabetz min ha'amim, asher hifitzacha Hashem shama ma'at ma'at, v'kach v'tavur ha'ban b'pirish al shir ha'shirim, ala pasuk ha'elach l'cha shlomo, shemitchila yekzat kibbutz goliat, ayidei rishayon ha'malchiyot. that the nations of the world will give permission for the Jews to come back. So again, what's interesting about all this is that if you know about the, you know, what? He died in 1892, so it was before, 1893, so it was before then. But I'm saying that's interesting because, you know, Kuftet Ben Omember and all that, the League of Nations and later the United Nations, all this, you're talking about dozens or up to, you know, 50 years after the Nitziv says this. But he's looking and he says, this is how Kibbutz Gol is going to take place. Which means, again, the Ramban, for the most part, is saying this is the future redemption, but we need to go back to the beginning to understand it. And that's where, again, this foreigner also goes in that direction. The Nitziv is saying, no, this is the future, and he says, no, this, and there's details that you need to look at, and what's impressive is the details he pointed out. By the way, he did quote something from the Ramban. For as much as I can tell, the Ramban in Shir HaShirim may not actually be the Ramban, but is actually maybe somebody known, he's a mysterious mystic who lived a little before the Ramban, known as Rabbeinu Ezra. He was a Kabbalist, and he does write these words, but I do want to be a little careful. He writes, "Uvrishion malchei ha'umot uveezratam yilchu le'eretz Yisrael," that with permission and with the help of the nations of the world, the Jews are going to come back. And by the way, people quote this all the time. What's really the only reason why it's a little unfair is because the line beforehand he says pretty much black and white, but this is after Mashiach comes. So whoever quotes this likes to leave that part out and just make it sound like, you know, the stages of redemption where the nations lie. But again, Rav Chevelle in his notes on the Ramban is quite impressed with the Ramban sees this. Okay. Rishayon means that... Well, that's why I said before, there's different stages. There's different stages of Mashiach. I'll tell you... Okay, leave that point. Two more things I want to say. What should we do first? Let's do Rav Yonis and Eifshitz first. Rav Yonis and Eifshitz, you know who he was? Maybe, yes. You heard the name? Rav Yonis and Eifshitz was one of the greatest rabbis of the 18th century. He had the unfortunate luck of living around the corner from another rabbi known as Yaakov Emden. They got into the hugest fight probably in the history of rabbis. They basically drew every single rabbi in Europe into their fight, whereby everybody was in Cheirim. Either you in Cheirim one side, Cheirim the other side. I don't know how long they lived around the corner from one another. I think it was something like 15 years. They made each other twice. But they dragged everybody into this fight. If this is totally unfair what I'm about to say, if I was to compare the two, Rav Yonis and Eifshitz was a greater Talmud Chacham, more influential, had much more students, and was a higher level. Rav Yaakov Emden had a printing press. That, for those of you who don't know what that is, that's like today having a blog. Okay? So, he had a printing press. Yeah? They both were. But Rav Yonis and Eifshitz wrote amulets, and the amulets he wrote were problematic in terms of supporting Shabtai Tzvi. The only question is whether he knew it, which means it could be that you have no idea what an amulet is, and you copy one that you saw from somebody else. This is magic, so you copy it and you give it to somebody. The amulets that he sent seem to have been problematic. Okay, and he had a son who became a follower of Shabtai Tzvi as well. So if you want to know if there's any smoke over here, yeah, there's some smoke, but just because there's smoke, it doesn't mean that he was guilty of every single horrific thing that that Rav Yaakov Emden accused him of. By the way, he was not guilty of every single thing that Rav Yaakov Emden accused him of, I can assure you. What? That was it. That was it. Everything revolved around that. It revolved on an amulet that he sent, and the amulet seemed to have been problematic theologically. Okay, now the question is, did he know? Did he not know? Leave it. Rav Yonis and Eifshitz, but as I said, was an incredible Talmud Chacham. His works, Crazy Placey, whatever... Listen to what he says on these psukim. Now, part of what bothers him is the use of the word vishav. You're going to come back, and again, if you didn't notice it, I'm going to read it again one more time. So what is that hashivota? One. That's two. Vishamata Bakolo, Kholasher Anochi Mitzavchayom, Atobanach Khalukhanashekha. Vishav Hashem Lokecha Echvutcha, God will return your returning, Virchamecha, have compassion on you. Vishav Vikibetzcha Mikolagayim is going to gather you. And afterwards comes this another other part. Vivechashem Lakechal Aritashayashu, then you need to come back. So what are all of these stages? So Rav Yonasan Eifshitz writes something which is absolutely chilling. The only reason I found this is because years ago I found a copy of Rav Yonasan Eifshitz's Peirush on Chumash, and I was learning it, and I read this, totally frightening. Zehu inyan chevlo shel Mashiach. What's chevlo shel Mashiach? The birth pangs of Mashiach. Which words is he saying that? Vishav v'kibetzcha mikol ha'amin. I'm going to gather you from all the nations. Zehu inyan chevlo shel Mashiach. Yonasan Eifshitz dies around, I'm more or less 1760, 70 or so. Sheyes somech l'geula, right near the time of the geula, of the redemption, ad sherabi michach me Yisrael, that means the things that are going to happen near the redemption are going to be so bad that the Gemara quotes the rabbis as saying, Amru, some rabbi said, yete velo achmine, let it happen, I don't want to be alive when it happens, I don't want to see it. Vahatam. Now listen carefully to this. Okay? Ki hashchina imanu begalut. Okay? First piece of information. You all knew this already. When Yaakov's about to come down to Egypt, he falls asleep. God comes to him and says, I'll be with you, and so on. When Jews go into galut, the Shechina goes into galut with him. And that's really, by the way, what we mean, we say that galut means galut hashchina. The definition in Judaism of galut is galut hashchina. Yes? That's yes. Right. As I said, Rashi brings that back in Bereishit, when Yaakov's about to go down to Egypt. Im al habanim l'shamreinu. As a mother looks after a child. So there's something really tender about this. The Jew is going to go into galut. God is going to be there with us, looking out for us. The gra on the pasuk, Hineze omeid al kotleinu, mashkiach menachalanot, mitzetz micharakim. The gra says, here he is, Hineze, pasuk mishirashim, omeid al kotleinu, he's standing by the wall, mashkiach miachalanot, he's looking right through the window, matzetz micharakim, but he's peeking through the cracks. The gra says that there's two types of ways that the Shechina relates to us. He says, in Eretz Yisrael and in Galut. In Eretz Yisrael, God is right there looking through the window. But in the exile, God is peeking through the cracks. Either way, God is there, God is with us. But in Eretz Yisrael, he says, you feel the Shechina, you feel it much more. In Chutz Laaretz, God's peeking through the cracks. Over here, he says, the Jews go into exile, the Shechina is going to come with them, as a mother looks after a child. Ula'eta geula, when the time comes near for the redemption, lo yashuva shechina itanu b'fam echad. The Shechina is not going to, like in a second, just go back to Eretz Yisrael in one moment. Rak hashechina yashuv mikodem le'Eretz Yisrael. What's going to happen is, first the Shechina is going to come back to Eretz Yisrael, v'achar kach l'shuv anachnu sham, and then we're going to come back. It's basically, you know, again, the mother goes, looks after the child, but now the child's going to come home. What does the mother do before the child comes home? Has to get the house ready. Shechina is God in the feminine. Shechina is feminine. Shechina is God as a mother. Shechina is going to come back, get everything ready. And then he writes, then we can come back. V'im kein, and if that's the case, kisha'anu b'gola, when we're still in exile, v'ashem ein b'kirbeinu, and God is not going to be with us at that moment, that's when the Jews are going to be most susceptible, I'll add in one word here, to a Holocaust, because at that moment the Shechina is not with us because the Shechina already went back to Eretz Yisrael. And that's why it said to return. Why? First God is going to come back, and then God is going to gather. It's not going to happen all at once. And then just to give us a little bit more to think about, he then says, and what happens when we get back to Eretz Yisrael? What happens next? He says, Vahir Becha Me'avotecha. Ki Yisrael Chatu Be'Eretz Yisrael. Because the Jews sinned in the land of Israel. Ve'Hechi Dami Bal Tshuva. What does the Gemara, the Rama pass in this way, what does the Gemara say about Bal Tshuva? What does Bal Tshuva need to be a Bal Tshuva Gemara? What does he need to be? In the same place, the same situation. What is it? Ve'Hechi Dami Bal Tshuva. Ba'Oto Makom. The Gemara says, Ba'Oto Isha. He goes, that's why we're back in Israel now. Which means that if the second Beit HaMikdash is destroyed because of Sinat Chinam, because a bunch of Jews hated one another, so what does God do? First, the Shechina comes back. When the Shechina comes back, Am Yisrael is going to be in Chutz Laaretz. Am Yisrael in Chutz Laaretz is going to be susceptible to all kinds of problems. When we come back, Shechina's here, we're back. Everything's great, except for one problem. What's the one problem? We still hate one another. So he says that God is going to put us in the exact same situation that we were, that we destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, and now says, okay, do a better job. That's how Rav Yonatan Eifshitz explains the Psukim. And I think it's just absolutely fascinating when you read this. Again, and if you look at it, he works it into each phrase along the way within the Psukim over here.
How is he working with, like, we're going to have the same problem, like, deal with the same problem? Where are
he says, V'hir b'chami avotecha. Basically, you're going to do better than your parents. One last thought. The Rambam also quotes these Psukim. He quotes them in Hilchot Tshuva. He writes, this is Perek Zayin Halacha Hei. And maybe this will help also with the point of Yonatan Eifshitz. He writes, Kol hanaviim kulan tzavu ala tshuva. All the prophets commanded regarding tshuva. Ve'ein Yisrael nigalin ela b'tshuva. And Jews are going to, the redemption will come because of tshuva. V'kfar hivticha Torah she'besof Yisrael asa tshuva, besof galutan, miyad nigalin. And the Torah, what word does he use? Hafticha, guaranteed, assured, that the end of history should be sof Yisrael lasot tshuva, and then they'll be redeemed. Shenemar v'yok yavo alecha kol dvrim v'shafta l'Hashem l'kecha. The Rambam doesn't understand v'shafta as a tzivoy, as a mitzvah. The Rambam understands it as a haftacha, which means what the Rambam is saying, and this is the way the Rabbi Soloveitchik understood this Rambam, that ultimately, if we believe in God, and we believe in the Torah, and we believe in the Nevi'im, we then have to believe in one more thing. What's that? We have to believe in Am Yisrael. Because the Torah says Am Yisrael is going to do tshuva. And what's the problem that we have today? We don't believe in Am Yisrael. We look around and we say, this isn't happening. And that then just takes us right back to this point of Sin Aschina. We don't, but again, I just want to point out the core. The core is that we don't really believe that Am Yisrael is going to do tshuva. And because we don't believe that there's tshuva, or the other way around, because there's sin and schein, and we don't believe they're going to do tshuva, and that's where everything unravels. If we really believed in Am Yisrael, we believe that the Torah says, again, the way the Rambam understands it, not a commandment. V'shafta l'Hashem l'checha is not a commandment. It's a prophecy which he says guaranteed will take place, which means that we need to believe in Am Yisrael much more, and to believe that Am Yisrael has this capacity of doing tshuva and returning to God, and that is the key for the Geula. So we saw, I think, at least four different approaches to these psukim. We saw the Ramban and the Sforno, we saw the Netziv, we saw the Yonatan Eifshitz, we saw the Rambam. I don't know how much of this is mutually exclusive. I think a lot of it can work together, but they do, each of them are taking it in what they see their particular fashion. Yeah. Yeah, we have a mitzvah to make it happen. Yes, yes. There was a passage I was going to read to you, but I don't want to go any further. Over here in the Rav Speaks, at the very end, on page 192, you can take a look. And I don't think what he's saying is shot. 193. But it's very moving. But it comes to this point about believing in Klal Yisrael. If one of your tapes came out, mine I saw was not recording, then let me know. Okay. Next week we won't learn, so everybody have to see. Ksim v'ksim tovim. Shana tova.
A lot of psychic.